Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the third straight year.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
Congratulations, Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. And don't forget, we've got that new feature on our website. If you go to the on the left side of any page, you'll see the show schedule, this week's show schedule. And any interview that we've already had, especially, you know, after we go off the air on the live show, very soon after that, you can click on the little speaker beside that guest name and hear just the interview, just that interview. So I hope you'll take advantage of that. And after you hear all the really smart things Steve Malanga says over the next few minutes, then I know you're going to want to go back and hear those things over and over again. And I actually messed up a while ago. I said Steve was a new friend. Steve's an old friend. We've been on the show before. It's been a while. I just missed him. And Steve is contributing editor to City Journal. He's senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He's also the author of a book that's literally being released this week. We're launching it on this show, The New Left, How American Politics Works Today. Steve, welcome back to the show.
Oh, well, thank you for having me back.
It's good to have you back. Folks, Steve says that while you and I are thinking about Republicans and Democrats, and maybe a couple of mugwumps out there, that that there's this whole other current of influence, of a political power and influence going on out there that you and I are probably not paying attention to. He calls it the new left. Steve, tell us who they are.
Well, I think the best way to describe it, the other way I describe it, is what I call the public economy. And what I mean by that, the government economy. What I mean by that is that over the last 40 years, we've had this tremendous explosion in the size of government here in the United States, and not just in government itself, but in also government-supported jobs. You know, we have areas in this country like social services and much of healthcare, which is really supported by government these days. And these folks have gradually, over time, come to see, you know, their self-interest in an ever-expanding government. And so what we see really in a lot of places, this is particularly true in a lot of cities, you see what I call the sort of tax consumers, those who benefit off of ever-growing government, forming into organizations that really oppose taxpayers. And it's not a question of whether they're Republicans and Democrats so much as it's just, if you look at the power, for instance, of the public sector employee unions in a lot of states, California, New York, for instance, they are really, you know, dominating the agenda, and it's not so much an agenda of one party as it is an agenda of, you know, individuals who see bigger government as in their self-interest because they work for government or they have contracts through government and so forth.
Do you actually see a little bit of a conflict? Not I don't mean a conflict, and I mean almost like a war between what you call the tax eaters and the taxpayers.
Well, there's definitely a constant tension between them, and what's really happened, one of the reasons we decided to publish this book now and really get it out, is that in the last couple of years, especially because of the recession and so forth, the bill is coming due. What's happened in the last 10 to 15 years is we've seen a real buildup, for instance, in the size of a local government. We've also seen an awful lot of pension kickers and salary raises in the public sector, really good pensions, far beyond what you get in the private sector these days, the ability to retire at 55,
right,
things of that sort. And what's happened is that we can't sustain that anymore. So in places like California, in New York, Rhode Island's another good example, huge, huge bills are coming due, huge deficits, big shortfalls in their public employee pension funds, and the taxpayers.
Let me give you an example and see if you think this is what I'm saying is what you're talking about. Somebody gets elected as a district attorney for a 4-year term. If they get elected, and I'm not sure what the thing is, I think it's if they're in office 10 years, so that means they'd be elected a third time, they can literally retire. They can get a pension after that, after serving as few as 10 or 12 years.
Oh,
is that
absolutely.
The kind of thing you're talking about?
Yeah, they're fully vested in the system.
Yeah.
And you know,
and I think, and I'm if I'm not mistaken, I think they actually, in many places, they can actually start drawing, not even waiting till they're like 62 or 65.
Oh, 55 is the standard. There, a lot of pension programs now in the public sector are what I call 25-55 or 30-55, meaning
right.
If you're in the system for 25 years, or if you reach 55 and you're vested in the system, you can retire at a substantial part of your pay. And so, you know, in the private sector, we're, of course, going in the opposite direction. People are working longer, sometimes out of choice, sometimes
right.
out of necessity. So it's really presenting a little bit of a strain, a big strain, actually, on taxpayers.
There's more to come. We got a lot more that Steve has uncovered in this book, The New, New Left. Steve Malenga is the author and our guest, 20 after, I'm sorry, 20 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with Steve Malenga. He's the contributing editor with City Journal, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, and author of a new book out, launched this week, called The New, New Left, How American Politics Works Today. Now, Steve, you say that this group... That while the rest of us are worrying about the influence of the Democrats and Republicans, this group, this new left, these group of civil servants, I guess you could call them, and the civil the public unions, they're actually influencing our local and national politics while the other party's going on. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we have to be careful not to just limit it to what I call civil servants, or it's really not the civil servants so much as it is the powerful public employee unions. It's also the people, like, you know, we created with the war on poverty all these local community groups that we funded because we wanted them to try to do good things in the community. Well, part of what we did was funding all these groups is that we created like a new power center because now, you know, they benefit from an expanding government.
Can you give us an example of what some of those are?
You know, well, the national one would be ACORN, you know, the large group that is in many, many different communities and many different cities. They have hundreds of chapters, and one of the things that they've been really instrumental with is, you know, shaking down a lot of banks. Basically, every time banks want to merge, they use the Community Reinvestment Act to get the banks to give them money, which they get to spend, you know, locally running programs.
Why do the banks give them money so they'll stay off their back?
Exactly. Yes, and because the legislation, the Community Reinvestment Act, you know, forces banks basically, or gives
right.
these groups the opportunity to make these kinds of challenges. And what happens is then, these groups get to run the program. So you get to use federal legislation to make a complaint, and then in order for the complaint to go away, the bank actually gives the group making the complaint money to run programs. Now, if that isn't a conflict of interest, I don't exactly know what it is.
But Steve, I wonder if the average person out there listening has ever had any kind of an experience with any of these folks you're talking about. I mean, maybe they belong to a public union. Maybe they're actually, you know, they belong to a public organization. You know, maybe do you include the teachers union in your in the new left?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
So they
maybe, you know, I know a lot of people who belong to the teachers union, and I think, you know, I wonder if people appreciate the concern that you have for what these folks are doing.
Well, you know, it's a very interesting thing. I think actually we find a lot of these public unions that in particular the rank and file is not in favor of the way their leaders are using the money politically, especially for instance, groups like the teachers unions and the American Federation of County and Municipal, you know, unions were heavily involved in the effort to defeat President Bush. Well, not a lot of the rank and file actually object to this, but they don't run the unions. One of the things that we see happening around the country is in some places, some states have created laws, what they call paycheck protection, which require that if a public union is going to use your dues for political purposes, you have to say that they can do that. And wherever these laws go into place, we find that a large number of the members of the union actually say, I don't want my money being used in this way. I don't want my money being used to try
Well, this is classic union leadership behavior. for any union. I mean, this has been going on for years.
Yes, but the very interesting thing is that what happened is that the most radicalized union leaders in America today are not in the private sector. They're in the public sector.
Well, in fact, the private sector union numbers are declining. I mean, they're falling off the table. The numbers are going down so low. You're saying that as the private sector union levels and their influence is declining, the public sector unions are increasing. Is this a counterbalancing type
First
of thing?
First of all, that's absolutely true. Whereas about 10% of the private sector workforce is unionized, about 37% of the public sector is unionized, and that sector is growing.
And by the way, Steve, let me stop for a second.
Sure.
30 years ago, those numbers were probably inverted.
Well, because they were
30-something percent, right, 30 years ago of unions, private sector,
right,
unions.
And 30 years ago, many public sector employees were not even allowed to unionize because the theory was, first of all, they're protected by civil service, and secondly, that government is a monopoly. And this is one of the big problems. In the private sector, if a union wins too many concessions or if a company gives too many concessions, they get disciplined by the marketplace. You know,
right,
what I mean? They get
exactly
into trouble.
And that's exactly what's happened.
Right. In the public sector, it's a monopoly. There is no discipline. Once,
right,
something's been given away, you never get it back. So it's,
and these people are not elected, are they?
They're hired.
And they're not elected. Meaning, I mean, you're talking about people basically like I think of the bureaucrats in Washington who implement the policies that the Congress passes. You know, we may kick out a senator because we didn't like some of the laws he passed, but we still got the laws that the bureaucrats are promulgating.
I think that's very much the case. And one of the things though that has happened is that the people coming out of this sector, because they see their influence, their you know, future in a growing government, have begun running for office. So you have places now like New York City, where 2/3 of the people in the city council come out of what I call the public sector union.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it used to be we said that legislators were filled with lawyers. Well, they're not filled with lawyers anymore. They're filled with people who've spent their lives in government and whose orientation is towards government and who, you know, as a result, one of the things I have is a lot of anti-business attitudes because they don't really understand business. They haven't worked in the private sector. So we're seeing in a lot of places, like California is another really good example. The California legislature, you know, became intensely anti-business in the past 5 years. And a lot of it is because of the rise of this kind of legislator out of this sector.
Stand by, Steve. We're going to take a quick break, folks. We'll be right back with Steve Malanga. When we come back, I'm going to ask him where these people are. Are they in the cities? Are they out in Flyover America? Where are these folks? Tin Tail, stay with us.
And I'm blue. I need you and your love to come.
We're back at 7 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame, a small business advocate, and we're having a great visit with our friend Steve Malanga. Steve is the author of The New Left, How American Politics Works Today. Steve, tell us where your book's available.
Well, you can always get it on Amazon.com. It's selling there. And you can always come to our website, which is www.city-journal.com. And that's where you can find, .org, rather, I'm sorry. And that's where you can find a lot of our work. A lot
City-journal.org. And the last name is Malanga, three A's. And Stephen is the name of the book with a V. Steve, one of the things you point out in your book is that these people, public union organizations, they're largely in the cities, aren't they?
Yeah, and it's actually, as I said before,
or at least that's where the real centers of power seems to be.
Well, there's a couple of reasons for this. The first reason is that, starting with the war on poverty 40 years ago, we poured what's now amounted to trillions of dollars into cities. And putting that money into cities, what we did was we funded a lot of these community activist groups, and they still exist. I'll give you a perfect example, okay? In New York City in about 1970, there were 50,000 people working in private social services. Today, there are 185,000 people, more people working in private social services than on Wall Street.
Tell us what that means, private social services.
What private social services basically is it used to be considered people who work for charities, but today it means people who work for nonprofit housing groups, people
right,
who work for drug rehabilitation.
That doesn't seem – now, 180,000, that's across the country?
No, that's in New York City.
Just in New – okay, that's just in New York City. I was going to say that. And it's not like a big number, but it does. That's a lot of folks in New York City.
Yeah, and you have to combine that, for instance, with another area's health care. Basically, what we've done is we're gradually socializing health care in this country. More than half of all health care is paid for by the government. And as a result of that, the health care industry, both the hospitals and the unions, have become huge, huge advocates, for instance, for expanding Medicaid, expanding Medicare, for increasing benefits and those sorts of things. And so they really, in New York and California, they are enormously powerful. And the healthcare employment in a place like New York, it's 10% of all employment.
Right.
So what you have is, you have them centered in the cities, but it's a phenomenon that's growing everywhere.
Well, I've seen it in small town America. But let me ask you a question. What do you think if you could do something about this thing that you write about, that you're concerned about in your book, what would you do?
Well, I think first of all, one of the things that's happening is we're seeing taxpayer groups and taxpayer revolts, starting to occur in any number of places. California is a pretty good example of that. I mean, people talk about the Arnold phenomenon, but Arnold himself is the creation of the recall movement, and that was done by taxpayer groups. So we're seeing
right.
the rise of taxpayer groups. And I think in particular, there's a number of different things on the agenda, this so-called paycheck protection. There are a lot of different states that are now considering this. There are a lot of initiatives out there.
Paycheck protection.
Yeah.
Is that like the living wage?
No, paycheck protection is a law that says that if a union wants to use your money for political purposes, you have to say that you
can. Oh, I see what you mean.
That.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because when we find when
which was something that failed in California a few years ago.
It failed in California, but it's been successful in a couple of states like Washington State and also Colorado.
So if I'm a union member and I don't want my money,
yeah,
my
exactly.
dues to go
exactly.
towards this politician or that
yep.
one, I can say that.
Yeah, absolutely. And in places where it's been passed, a large number of union members have said that. It is on the ballot again in California, and it's on the ballot in several other places.
Are you concerned that these groups are growing exponentially and that one day could undermine the two-party system?
Well, here's the thing. In Europe, free market economists have this theory that when you get to about 60% of the population that is in some way or another living off of government, either through
right.
working for government or getting transfer payments,
right.
once you get to about that level, reform becomes impossible because too many people have a stake in it.
What's our percentage?
Well, it's under 50% right now, but when you consider that in places like New York City, 30% of the workforce is this public sector economy,
mm-hmm.
and across the nation, 25% of the workforce is that economy. And then when you add people who are getting transfer payments, it gets up there, up to the range of 40 to 45%.
Well, and what you're talking about has already happened in Europe, and it's one of the reasons they're not competitive, isn't it?
It's exactly, and they can't get reform, as
yep.
bad as things are over there.
Look at France. Follow what's going on in France
exactly.
right now.
Exactly.
Perfect example. A lot of good stuff. Steve, we got more to talk about. I want you to come back and talk about what you say in your book about the living wage issues.
Sure, I think we could talk about the whole business community and its relationship.
We'll get you back again real soon. This is important stuff,
sure.
folks. The New Left is the title of the book by Stephen Malanga. Steve, thanks for being here. We'll see you next time.
Oh, thank you. Bye-bye.
Steve Malanga, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be back. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.